They ate at the riverside. Price posted himself downwind of Valentine and Duvalier, but it didn't help much.
Lots of bad blood gets built up in this business.
After some head bobbing and a mutual dental exam, the two grogs sat down next to each other. Anka ate a few bites of his stew, then passed her the bowl.
She speaks Northern Slope dialect. I only know a few words.
Duvalier was already mopping up her remains with a biscuit. Valentine marveled at her appetite.
You really taking us on, or was that just show?
I'm taking you.
Not through Chattanooga, I hope.
That was just in case Earl gets a second big idea of his life and goes to the authorities, such as they are.
And what changed your mind?
I got to thinking that I don't have too many more years in me to pay Eberetti back. If I have to step off, I'll do it clean. Plus, B got a look at your big friend when he came down to the river to hit the shitter. She got excited. B gets lonely for her own, I think.
I've had my mating. She is dead. Besides, we are not dogs. Our strains do not mix.
But you share some customs, looks like.
I've been among her kind. Do not misunderstand me. She is well-formed and agreeable. I just could no more be a mate to her than you could.
I want to put a few miles on across the river before dark. I have a mule. B and I'll go load him up.
Is there a chance that you'll take a bath before we set out?
What? And spoil my camouflage?
You're hoping to pass as a feral hog, perhaps?
No. Everett explained it to me years ago. I never could hide life sign for shit. All the critters interfere with the hoods. I don't read as human at any kind of distance.
Price walked up to the back doorstep and returned his plate, then disappeared into the stable.
You want your other biscuit, Val?
You got used to him faster than I did. How'd you keep your dinner down?
Greta in there gave me a bottle of clove oil. It's good for warning the mosquito bites. A little dab'll do ya, provided you put it under your nostrils.
They stood in southern Kentucky on a little knob of a hill looking out over a meadow. Price knew about moving cross-country. B usually took the lead, walking with her eerily careful grace. Then the three humans, taking turns with the compass and map to avoid getting trail stale, followed by the mule. The mule was unusually cooperative for its breed, perhaps owing to a jaunty knit Rasta cap it wore, complete with fly-scaring dreadlocks. Valentine didn't dare look to see if the dreadlocks were simply sewn in or if they were attached to a scalp, and the mule wasn't telling. Anka brought up the rear. At least once a day, they zigged on a different course, heading north the way a sailing ship might tack against the wind. What caught Valentine's eye about this particular meadow was the strange furrowing. Lines of thickly weeded earthen banks meandered across the field like a drunken farmer's tilling. The banks were perhaps a foot high at most and ran down little open spaces clear of smaller trees. Behind them, Duvalier knelt over a spread-out Birdstown Clarion. The newspaper, a weekly melange of property and equipment for sale and lease, with a few stories about the achievements of local NUC youth teams, wasn't being used for the articles. Duvalier was pounding together two ancient red bricks pulled from a collapsing house, collecting the fine dust on the paper to be poured into an envelope and used as foot powder. B slept next to her in the sun, her short but powerful legs propped up on a deadfall. The mule, the beast's name was Jimmy, cropped grasses and tender young plants.
I've never seen growth like this before.
You're looking at snake trails. That sign left by legworm feeding.
I've known ground like this. Older, though. More evenly grown up.
You see, Val?
Price passed Valentine's binoculars back. His odor lingered on them, but Valentine pressed the sockets to his eyes anyway, after a critter inspection.
Legworms move in small herds. I've never seen over a dozen together. They pull up the sod with their mouths. They eat everything. Leaf, stem, and root. And of course, mice and voles and whatnot that get pulled up. Then they crap it out the other end more or less constantly. The waste is pretty sweet fertilizer. And their digestive system isn't all that thorough. Quantity over quality. So in the worm cast, there's a lot of seeds, living roots, stuff that comes back. It grows extra lush, and you get these little walls of vegetation.
They don't mess with big trees.
Price pointed at a thick oak.
They'll climb up and take some low branches. That's why some of these trees look a bit like umbrellas.
Those trails will lead us to them if we find fresher leavings.
Sure. Except with legworm tracks, it's hard to tell which direction they're going. If you're lucky, you'll come across a partially digested sapling. The way the branches get pressed down makes it like feathers in an arrow, only reversed.
How do they feel about trespassers?
Depends if they can make a profit off you.
They cut fresh worm sign 2 days later. After picking at the less digested branches and shrubs, everyone agreed that the wide end of the cone was heading northeast.
5 worms. 2 big on the outside, 3 lesser in.
Legworms mate in pairs?
No, more like big orgies in the winter. Seriously, a legworm's dogpile's a sight to see.
What are we looking to get out of a bunch of worm herders?
Price signaled for B.
This is their land. I want permission to cross it. If we're lucky, they might bargain us up a mount.
We don't have much to offer.
Your body's already spoken for.
I've got some strong soap in my bag. Use it, and I'll keep up my end.
I thought humans made love face to face.
Valentine wasn't sure he'd heard right until he looked at his friend. Even Price knew him well enough by now to know that one ear up, one ear out meant he was joking. Catching up to the legworms wasn't as easy as having a clear trail made it sound. When moving without eating, a legworm goes at a pace faster than a horse's walk, similar to the Tennessee Walking Horse's famous 6 to 12 miles per hour run-walk. According to Price, they could pull up turf at a good 3 miles an hour, a typical walk for a human on a sidewalk who isn't loaded down with pack and gun. So they moved as fast as they could through the warm fall day, sweating and swearing at each new hill. Price and Valentine decided the course was arcing somewhat northerly, so they took a chance and tried to cut across the chord of the arc. They never picked up the trail again. Other riders found them. Bee pointed them out first. She dropped down on her haunches and pointed at a tree-topped hill. It took Valentine a moment to recognize what he saw. The legworm's pale yellow color was surprisingly effective camouflage in the shade of a stand of elms and oaks. 2 figures sat astride it, probably human.
Everyone wait here.
Feels too much like a standoff. Why not all go?
If you like, but as strangers, we've got to approach unarmed.
Price unslung his Kalashnikov, held it over his head, then placed it on the ground. He made a motion toward B, and she sat next to his gun. Behind them, Anka kept a hand on Jimmy the Mule's halter.
Feel like showing off your famous charm school repertoire?
No. If there's a problem, I like to disappear fast without anyone getting a good look at me.
I shall stay back as well.
Valentine placed his U-gun on the grassy ground and set the pistol on top of it. He had to jog to catch up with Price.
Let me do the talking, Val. They're tetchy around strangers.
Any particular reason for it?
Nobody likes them much. Most folks in the civilized world, beg your pardon, but that's how Tennesseans see it. Stuck between corn liquor-swilling gorillas west and east. Avoid them like they carry a bad fungus. Even the churchies keep clear, except a few unreformed Jesus pushers.
Why do the Kurians let them be?
They get loads over the mountains one way or another. Between the New York corridor and Chattanooga, precious little moves by train. The lines are always getting attacked by gorillas, and you have to pay through the nose per pound. A legworm can haul as much cargo as a rail car. They and their brothers in Virginia are the main east-west smuggling artery for the whole Midwest. Not that they don't do legitimate runs, too.
They hopped across 2 old worm trails, little more than hummocks of summer-dried weeds, and entered the woods. Evergreens staked out their claims among the tough oaks and smooth-skinned hackberries. The 2 men astride the 60-foot segmented worm wore black leathers fitted with an assortment of barbs like oversized fish hooks. A 3rd had dismounted and stood near the front of their beast, a burlap sack of potato peelings and pig corn thrown under its nose. All 3 men wore their hair long, tied down in back, and then flared out like a foxtail. All were on the grubby side, but didn't make an art form out of it like their guide. Valentine had never seen a live legworm at rest. Its legs were hundreds of tiny, paired, black claw-like legs running down the bottom of its fleshy hide like a millipede's. Oversized versions of the claws, growing larger even as the front of the worm grew thinner, pulled up the corn and the earth beneath, stuffing it into a bilateral mouth. Scimitar-like tusks, facing each other like crab claws, stuck out the front.
Well, that's close enough, stranger.
Friendly call, High Rider. I'm Hoffman Price, friend to the Bulletproof, Worm Wildcats, and the Uttercross.
We're Bulletproof.
I know. That's why I listed you first.
Story. And if it ain't, you know we don't like bums traipsing around our property.
I know him, Zach.
The one with the corncobs dropped his sack. He had a little gray in his red-brown hair and a little more flesh around his middle.
He's no bum. He came and got that Swenson newbie, maybe 4 years back. That colt the dispatcher carries, he got it from him.
You want to vouch for him, Cookie?
I'm just saying the dispatcher knows him is all.
Where can I find the dispatcher? Is it still dallying?
Sure is. He's east. Soon as we've eaten, we're moving on fast.
Will you let us ride tail? 3 human, 2 grog, mule in tow.
You might be riding into trouble. One of our pods got jumped. The dispatcher sent out a call.
Our guns will secure the Bulletproof as long as we enjoy the Bulletproof's hospitality. You can count us on your side of the worm.
The man behind Zach pointed with a fingerless gloved hand.
You know the words, but that don't mean much to me.
He says he wants business with the dispatcher. That's good enough for me. You can ride tail. Enjoy the music back there.
Thank you, High Rider.
Price touched Valentine and they turned.
What did we just agree to?
When you ride with the Bulletproof, any of the legworm tribes, really, you enjoy their hospitality. But you're expected to stand with them in any kind of confrontation.
You mean fight?
Don't worry. When two tribes get into a feud, they each line up on either side of an open field. There's a sporting match, like lacrosse, only with 2 contestants. All you have to do is cheer.
What kind of feud?
Could be anything. Usually it's feeding ground. One group allegedly goes in another's area. It's hazy at best. About a third of Kentucky's divided up between the tribes. If they're caught, it's called an arrest, but it boils down to being taken hostage. So they hold a contest. If the intruder side wins, the hostages and their worms are released. If the intruded side wins, a ransom and restitution are paid.
Sounds rather civilized.
Again, except for yelling, you won't have to do much.
Zach, Gibson, the man behind Zach, and Cookie gave them a quick legworm riding lesson and issued them each a cargo hook and a climbing goad. The cargo hook resembled a pirate's replacement hand, hanging from a chain whose links were wide enough for the attachment of lines. They used a pair to attach a long lead to the mule. The goad resembled a mountaineer's pickstaff with a crowbar-like digger at one end and a long spike at the other. To mount the legworm, you plunged your goad into one of the many thick patches of dead skin. The worm's skin reminded Valentine of fiberglass insulation, and lifted yourself up to a height where a buddy could pull you the rest of the way up. Under no circumstances were you to use one of the longish whisker spikes projecting here and there from newer patches of skin in cracks between the dead material.
They'll twist good if you grab a whisker.
Do they ever roll?
Only if they're hurt. You abandon ship quick if that happens.
Bee went first. She plunged her goad hook up high, almost at the top of the worm thanks to her reach, then swung up on pure arm muscle. She accepted the rifles, who then aided Valentine and Duvalier in their climbs. Anka eschewed his goad. He stuck the implement between his teeth and jumped up, grabbing great handfuls of spongy skin and clambered up with his toes.
That's how the gray ones in the west mount.
Anka attached his wood-framed pack, plunged the cargo hook into the creature's back, then casually gripped the chain with his long toes. Only the grogs could sit astride the worm's broad back. The humans rode in a leaning side-saddle fashion.
Just like you're on a flying carpet. None of you heard of a flying carpet? Ignorance.
Everybody set?
Zach's head was visible over the cargo netting holding down the trio's supplies.
All top and rigged.
A lot of us don't say that anymore. We just say, yeah. Why don't you try it, tender thighs?
Zach reached back with a pole capped by something like an oversized legworm goad with a point at the end and stuck the hook down between the legs. That part of the legworm, right under Gibson, gave a little rise, and they started ahead.
You can stop bellyaching that people who aren't one of us aren't one of us anytime, Gib.
After the initial jerk of motion, the legworm ride made a believer out of Valentine. Whatever the legs were doing below, up top, the creature simply glided, as though riding on an air cushion. Little changes in the topography came up through the beast with all the discomfort of a cushioned rocking chair. The mule was all too happy to follow behind without his pack.
For all you know, the gal's being brought to a tribe wedding. Or the scarred guy's the Casablancan minister of the great Oval Office in Rose Garden. Traveling incognito pig. They'll be a good tribe, or be silent.
Normally, Valentine would be a little embarrassed at overhearing a dressing down. Except he didn't like Gibson. But good manners won out, and he diverted his hearing elsewhere. To the steady staccato crunch of the fast-falling legs. He'd forgotten how strange legworms sounded. Marbles poured out of a bag in a steady stream onto a pile of crumpled paper, as Evan Pankow, a veteran wolf, had described it in his first year of training. The gentle motion of the legworm relaxed Valentine.
You guys ever sleep up here?
Only one at a time. Other two have to keep each other alert.
The beast must have dipped its nose, if nose was the right word for the scowl-like front end, and scooped a car hood-sized divot from the earth with its tusks. Zack employed his legworm crook again and worked one of his three reins. With the legworm in motion, the music they'd been told to expect started. The beast dropped a cemetery plot-sized mass of compost behind. Valentine cautiously took a whiff. All he could smell was Price, and the other people, and Groggs.
Be thankful for small favors, Allie.
It's always loud at startup. Gas gets built up while it stands still. Give it a minute, and you'll just hear a plop now and then as it makes a deposit.
I don't mind at all if it means traveling off my feet.
Valentine wished he could see the reins better. The Groggs he'd encountered in Oklahoma used four, two set to either side. The men of the Bulletproof used three, one on each side and one up top. Valentine made a mental note to ask Zack about its utility. He learned that and a great deal more at the dinner break. This time, Zack fed the legworm on bags of peanut shells and ground up acorn. Price's mule liked the smell of the nuts and joined in, chomping contentedly, but rather messily compared to the legworm, who took earth, sod, and shell together in a single gulp.
Well, if we have to move fast, most of what we carry is food for the mount.
How do you make it turn?
Zack pointed to the rein, a metal loop projected from the beast.
Yeah, but what does that do?
Oh, you want the science teacher version? Well, a worm's such a big bastard, there's not much we can do that'll influence it. So, we make it think that all its motions are its idea. And all those whiskers are wired, so to speak, to an organ under the skin on either side that looks a little like an accordion. When it turns to keep from rubbing against a tree or whatever, the accordion contracts and it turns. That rein is attached to the accordion, and when we pull it closed, the beast turns.
And keeping the nose up?
It's got a balancing organ, kind of like your ear, in the top of its front end. A little jerk makes it feel like it's out of balance. So it'll stick its head straight forward until the organ feels like it's back in balance. But if they're fed regularly, they don't graze all the time. They don't need all that much if it's fair quality feed. All the dirt they pull up in the wild is a lot of wasted effort.
How does it breathe?
Well, that's something. Here, look underneath. That lighter flesh, we call that the membrane, but it's actually a good 2 feet thick. That thing gets oxygen into its bloodstream.
Water don't make much of a difference, but they get sluggish as hell and try to find high ground. Though sometimes swamp water will kill them.
I never seen one this close.
Where are you from?
Iowa. Got out young. My dad worked for, you know.
Yeah, me too. Indiana. Practically grew up under a tower. The P worked electricity. Cool stuff, but not if you're reporting to one of those pale-ass jumpers twice a day.
I left home at 11. Ugly scene.
So, what does the flea ranch over there want with the Bulletproof?
I'm just trying to get from point A to point B.
Yeah, we'll be at camp a little after sundown. Don't fall off.
Gib drove the legworm a little faster through open country. After a little resistance, the mule trotted behind to avoid being dragged. The rolling blue hills left off, and they climbed onto the beginning of a plateau where they gave man, grog, and mule a breather. Valentine saw wooded mountaintops in the distance. As night fell, Zack looked over the landscape with a monocular.
Keep your guns handy. There are gorillas in those mountains.
They struck a road and followed it to a waypoint town of a dozen empty homes, unless you counted barn owls and mice, a couple of hollow corner bars, and an overgrown gas station and market once dependent on the farm clientele. Valentine marked fresh legworm furrows everywhere. Some ran right up to the road surface before bouncing off like a ricocheting bullet. They passed up a rise, and a boy standing guard over the road and his bicycle waved them toward a commanding-looking barn. A pile of weedy rubble that might once have been a house stood close to the road, and a crisscross of torn earth emanated from it. Valentine guessed that from a low-flying airplane, the landscape would look like an irregular spiderweb. Legworms stood everywhere, pale blue billboards in the moonshine.
Who's that with you, Zach?
Visitors looking for the dispatcher. I'm vouching, and I'll bring him in. Where is he?
Up in the barn.
We're here, folks. You'll have to leave your guns, of course.
How do we...
Get a newbie pole, Royd.
No, I'll help.
Anka slid down the tapered tail. He lifted an arm to Duvalier.
Here.
Valentine jumped down, as did B and Price.
Why not just jump? I've seen you dive head first from two stories.
Just a helpless little old thing without a big man around, Val. No harm in having him think that, anyway.
They got out of the lane and made a pile of their weapons and packs.
Our coffee's by the fire pit. Toilet holes are up in the old house. There's a lime barrel, so send down a chaser. Let me know when you're ready to see the dispatcher.
B, guard.
Doesn't she have to use the toilet pits?
She's not shy, and she always buries.
I would just as soon not scoot my hindquarters on the grass.
There's plenty of new Universal Church Testaments up there. Help yourself.
Valentine wanted coffee more than anything. Duvalier took her walking stick and headed for the rubbled house. They'd missed dinner, but a line of stretchers propped up on barrels still held bread and roast squash. Sweating teenage girls washed utensils in boiling water as a gray-haired old couple supervised from behind glowing pipes.
Coffee?
That pot, stranger.
Valentine took a tin cup out of the hot wash water, choosing a mild scalding over the used cups tossed on the litters and plywood panels, and shook it dry. It was real coffee. Not the Jamaican variety he'd grown regrettably used to while with Malia at Jayport, but real beans nonetheless. He liked the bulletproofs even better. The surge of caffeine brought its own requirements. He remembered to chase it down the hole leading to the unimaginable basement chamber with a ladle of lime. McDonald R. Dalian, dispatcher for the Bulletproof, was viewing babies he hadn't met yet when the Price Valentine mission entered his barn. The barn was a modern cavernous structure that had survived its half-century of inattention in remarkably good shape, thanks to its concrete foundation and aluminum construction. Small chemical light sticks Valentine had heard called three-dayers in the Trans-Mississippi Combat Corps hung from the rafter network above. Men, women, and children of the Bulletproof, most in their black leathers or denim, sat atop defunct, stripped farm machinery to watch Dispatcher Dalian hold court. Another end of the barn had been turned into a food storage area. Shelves had been cleared of odds and ends and replaced by sacks of corn and barrels of flour. A laundry also seemed to be in operation, with clothes and diapers drying on lines strung between stripped combines and the wall. The dispatcher had indeterminate features, a little Asian, and maybe a dash of Irish or African for curly hair, and a great high prow of a nose. Except for the curly hair, he reminded Valentine of his father, especially around the protruding ears and outthrust jaw.
Oh, look at this little baby.
He cooed over a sleeping baby as the proud mother and father looked on.
She's grabbing my finger even while she's sleeping. Don't tell me she won't be a lead high rider someday.
The dispatcher and the father of the child bumped their fists, knuckle to knuckle. The flying buttress nose went up. He handed the baby back and turned.
Airstrike. Only one living thing on the planet smells like that. Hoffman Z. Price has returned.
And grateful for the generosity of the Bulletproof, Dispatcher.
You picked your moment. You got the better part of the tribe together.
Is worm meat still profitable in Lexington?
You're innocent of the ways of the trading pits as well as soap, brother. That den of money changers and Pharisees takes my meat and my belief in human goodness. I kid. But if it weren't for the grogs in St. Louis, I'd be bankrupt. So I hope you're feeling generous. If I have another fugitive in my tribe, I'll drive a harder bargain.
Valentine found himself liking the dispatcher, even if he could be categorized as a quisling. There was no step into my office, as far as he could tell. No retinue of subordinates and bodyguards one might expect of a feudal lord. The man carried out his business in the center of his people. Any interested eye or curious ear could hear the latest. Price pointed to Valentine.
I'm looking for a ride to the Ohio for five. We need food for same. Myself, B, David here, his friend Allie, and another grog, an emissary from the Omaha area named Anka.
What does the job pay?
2 gold justices, Fort Knox Mint.
Hard currency. Lovely. But it won't pay for the kind of numbers you'd need to get up there safely. There are towers along the Ohio. That could be a dangerous trip, and the Bulletproof have no friends north of Lexington. I'll have to see if I can find you a lead rider willing to hazard a one-worm excursion.
You seem to have most of them here. That man Zach seems capable.
He is. I'll speak to him after tomorrow's challenge. He's a bit distracted at the moment. His sister was a lead rider for the legworm that started all this.
Now where should we camp?
Bed down where you like, but keep clear of the campfires around that farm across the fields to the east. That's Wildcat Camp.
May we use your laundry, sir?
Of course. David, our soap is yours. Do you hear me, Hoffman?
As they walked back to collect the others, Valentine had one more question for Price.
I didn't know you could eat legworms. Even in the Ozarks, we couldn't stomach it.
You have to butcher them fast. The meat can be ground into pig feed, but there are other ways. Did you ever have a rib strip?
Valentine remembered the pre-processed barbecued meat from his days masquerading as a coastal marine and in Solon's short-lived TMCC. Placed in a hard roll with onions and pickle relish, it was a popular sandwich.
You don't mean...
Yeah! You put enough barbecue sauce on, you can hide the taste. Rib strips are ground and pressed legworm.
Human instinct is to join a crowd, and Valentine gave in to it the next morning. Everyone in the party, save Duvalier, came along to watch events. At breakfast, mixing with the Bulletproofs, he learned a good deal about what to expect out of the contest. The challenge was fairly simple, a mixture of lacrosse and one-on-one basketball. The two sides lined up at either end of an agreed field, roughly 1,000 yards apart. At the Bulletproof side, a line of short construction stakes with red blasting tape stood about 10 yards out from the crowd, and the only one at the line was the dispatcher. Valentine decided there was probably an interesting story having to do with the rifle range of an experienced marksman behind it, but didn't press the issue. The two contestants each went to the center of the field, carrying only a legworm starting hook. The referee, usually either a medical man or a member of the clergy, would be in the center of the field with a basketball. He or she would toss it high enough in the air to dash out of the way before it came back into crook swinging distance, and the contest would end when one contestant brought the basketball to his side. Nothing was happening yet. The dispatcher and some of his riders were meeting their opposite numbers in the Wildcats, presumably negotiating the recompense that would be paid. Valentine turned to a Bulletproof rider who was also explaining the rules to his young son.
Why a basketball?
Well, you know the answer, Ferk. Tell him.
The boy shook his head and shrank against his father. Valentine turned away to save the boy embarrassment and looked out across the dew-spangled field, recently hayed. Opportunistic spiders had woven their webs on the stalks, creating tiny pieces of art like cut glass in the lingering summer sunshine. Some operational farms still existed in this part of Kentucky. Valentine wondered how they ran off grazing legworms.
It's about the size of a worm egg. That and basketballs are easy finds.
No other rules?
I see where you're going. You can't bring anything but the crook. You're stripped down to your skivvies to make sure. Not even shoes.
Does one ever try to just brain the other, then walk back to the home side with the ball?
Aw, you get that sometimes, but both sides hate a plain old brawl. Slugging's no way to pump up your mojo or your tribes.
A stir of excitement broke out in the crowd when a wandering, wild, or unreined legworm dug a feeding tray toward the challenge field. A pair of legworms with riders hustled out at full speed, for a legworm, about the rate of a trotting horse. By judicious use of the mount's bulk, the furrow was redirected. By the time that ended, the two parties had returned from the center of the challenge field. The dispatcher looked downcast. Valentine edged closer to the center of the line of people, but many others had the same idea.
What's up?
Wildcat Challenger's a grog. Some kind of import.
It's a ringer.
Damn them.
Take a knee, everyone.
Everyone but the dispatcher sat down. He looked around, nodded to a few, and spoke out to the squash field of fox-tailed heads.
Yes, you heard right. They got a big grog they're using in the challenge. Biggest one I've ever seen. Even standing on all fours, he's bigger than me.
Valentine judged the dispatcher at about 6'3". On Ka's size, could there be another golden one wandering the Cumberland Plateau? A well-muscled, shirtless man walked up, presumably the contestant, as everyone else had jackets or knits against the cool of the morning, warming fast as the sun rose.
I saw a man challenge a grog when I was 8.
I remember that one. Fontaine died from his injuries. There's bad blood for this one. According to their dispatcher, Tika killed a man when she got taken into custody. Could be her looking for payback. We're going to forfeit. It's a hell of a ransom, but I'm not risking Tuck's head over a challenge.
Might be a bluff. They're trying to get you to fold up by showing you a big, mean grog. I'll go out there. It's my skull.
And end up like Fontaine? No.
Oh, that means a feud. Oh, Lord, Lord.
Sir, I'll take a whack at this grog.
Hundreds of heads turned in his direction. The dispatcher straightened.
You ever even held a legworm crook, son?
I played grounders with grogs.
Leastways, if he gets his head bashed in, it's no feud.
Can we trust you, David?
I don't see how you can lose. You're ready to forfeit. Worst thing that could happen is that you pay the ransom anyway and get your riders back.
Let David do it. Let him take that Goliath.
Okay, boy. Strip down and grab your crook.
I got one request, dispatcher.
What's that?
Can I borrow a pair of underwear? Mine aren't fit for public display.
Valentine stood behind a blanket held up by Anka as he stripped. Zach held out a white pair of shorts.
Hey, they look a little odd, but they're the best thing for riding. They're military issue up in Indiana for their bike troops. Everything stays tucked up real tight.
Thank you.
Anka hovered as he tried on the shorts.
My David, let me try my luck at this.
I'm from Minnesota, old horse. Born with a hockey stick in my hand.
Then you will be careful out there.
Since when am I anything but?
And what year were you born? Be careful. If it is a gray one, when they are on all fours and running, they cannot turn their heads or hear very well behind. He will not see you if you come at him from the side.
Understood.
Price paced back and forth as Bee pulled up and chewed on dandelion roots. Valentine wondered where Duvalier had gone. But then a sporting event, even one as deadly serious as this, probably wasn't of interest to her. The shorts were snug-fitting, running from his waist to mid-thigh. The padded white pouch at the groin made him feel like one of the come-hither boys that strutted on the streets of New Orleans.
Oh, that's cute.
Better than the ones with 3 weeks of trail.
Anka dropped the blanket and walked with Valentine, Price, and Bee to the center of the line of spectators. Valentine walked barefoot, testing the field soil. Some murmured about the burns on his lower back and legs. The dispatcher stood at the center of the line with the 12-foot legworm crook, looking like a warrior out of some medieval tapestry.
I can still order it called off.
I can't resist a challenge.
Well, you look fit enough, except for the limp. Hope you can run.
I can run.
Valentine tried the crook, an all-wood version of the one he'd seen Zach use. Its hooked end had a rounded point.
Using metal isn't considered sporting.
Any rule on length?
Yes, can't be over 15 feet.
How about, say, 7?
You must be joking. A grog can already outreach you. You'll just be cutting yourself shorter.
I'd rather swing a handy short crook than an awkward long one.
Anka buried his old TMCC utility machete into the haft of the crook where Valentine indicated and broke it over his knee. Valentine tried the crook again. Now he could run with it. 500 yards away, in the center of the field, the grog waited. He looked huge even at this distance.
Good luck, David.
Is anyone taking odds?
You don't want to know.
All you have to do is get the ball back to our line.
Valentine marked the stakes, stretching 100 yards to either side with the crowd spread out behind.
How you do it is up to you.
Valentine looked at Anka. The golden one's ears twitched in anxiety, but one of the great limpid eyes winked. Valentine raised his arm to the crowd and turned to walk into the center of the field, stretching his arms and legs as he went. The legworm ride yesterday had tasked his muscles in a new way, a trace of stiffness which gave him a good deal more cause to doubt. He wondered how the bulletproof would feel about a valiant try. The referee wore taped-up glasses and a modest crucifix. He carried a basketball under his arm and leaned over to speak to the grog as Valentine approached the halfway point. Valentine noticed a pistol in a holster with a lanyard running up to the referee's neck. The grog rivaled Anka in size, almost as tall and a good deal wider of shoulder and longer of arm. Pectoral muscles, like Viking round shields, twitched as he shifted his half-ton of weight from side to side. The grog's legworm crook lay before his massive hands as though to establish a line Valentine would never cross.
You're Tuck?
Change of programming. I'm David.
David, your wildcat opponent is Vista. Vista, your bulletproof opponent is David. Don't touch me or you forfeit. Interference by anyone else also results in a forfeit for the interfering side.
The referee indicated a pair of flat river stones.
This mark is the center of the field, agreed to by your respective dispatchers.
As the grog yawned, it displayed a melon-sized gullet guarded by 4-inch yellow incisors capped with steel points top and bottom. The great double-thumbed hand picked up the long crook. Valentine noted the hook on Vista's crop had been chewed to a sharpened point and hoped that his intestines wouldn't end up draped over the loop at some point. The referee held out the basketball.
The object of the contest is to get this ball to your own line. The game begins when the ball hits the ground and ends when the winner brings it home to his own goal line. I'll fire my pistol in the air to indicate a victory. Any questions?
The referee stepped to the two stones in the center. Neither said anything. Vista glared at Valentine. Valentine stared back. The referee held out the ball between them, and when he lowered it for the bounce toss, the grog was looking away.
May the best, contestant win.
The referee tossed the basketball straight up into the air and backpedaled out from between man and grog, quickly enough that Valentine felt air move. Valentine felt not at all encouraged and took a few steps back out of clobbering range as Vista raised his crook. The ball struck. Valentine's brain registered that it took a wildcat bounce. Helped along by a quick swing of Vista's crook that Valentine didn't have the length to intercept. But Vista went for him instead of the ball. The grog leaped forward, using one of his long arms as a decathlete might use a pole. And upon landing, swung his crook for the air occupied by Valentine. If Vista didn't want the ball, Valentine would take it. Valentine sprinted after the ball, now rolling at a very shallow angle toward the bulletproof on its second bounce. The instinct to just go toe-to-toe with Vista and decide the contest in a brawl surged for a moment, but he'd lose. Valentine looked back to see Vista galloping toward the ball, crook clenched at the midpoint in those wide jaws. Grog's running on all fours looked awkward, but they were damn fast. Valentine cut an intercepting course.
Vista, you messed up.
The grog's crook had the hook end on Valentine's side. Taking great lungfuls of air, Valentine poured it on. He reached forward with his own hook, Vista's head invisible behind the mountainous shoulders, and latched his hook to Vista's. Valentine planted his feet to bring the racing grog down the way a cowboy would turn a cow's head. The field smacked Valentine in the face as he landed, yanked off his feet by five times his weight in charging grog. The crook slipped away like a snake. By the time he looked up again, Vista had retrieved Valentine's crook and used it to give the ball a whack, sending it farther toward the wildcat line. Vista left off the contest. Instead of following the ball to a likely victory, he advanced on Valentine, long crook in his left hand, held hook out, and Valentine shorter when looking like a baton in the right. Apparently, the wildcat dispatcher wanted to teach the bulletproof a lesson.
You wily gray bastard. You suckered me!
Animal triumph shone in Vista's eyes. Valentine tasted blood from a cut lip. The referee ran across the periphery of Valentine's vision, moving for a better angle on events. Valentine stood up, swiping the dirt from his knees as he watched Vista advance, and ran his tongue along the inside of his teeth. Vista raised his twin weapons, stamping his feet and banging the crooks together. Valentine raised his middle finger in return. The grog knew what that meant. It charged, wild-eyed. Valentine ran away. He felt the long crook tug at his hair and ran harder. Vista couldn't sprint with weapons in his hands, so the grog paused. Valentine used the precious second to achieve some distance, then settled into his old pounding wolf run, pretending his aching left leg didn't exist. Vista gained on him, slowly, but only by sprinting full tilt, and the grog couldn't breathe as well with two crooks crammed into its bear trap-like mouth. Valentine slowed a little, listening to the footfalls behind, but didn't dare look back. A trip and a sprawl would be fatal. Vista slowed. The grog's eyes no longer blazed, but were clouded by new doubt, and it came to a halt perhaps 100 yards from the bulletproof line. Valentine glanced back and saw Anka making a sawing motion with one of his mighty arms. Vista dashed off at an angle southward, running an oblique course for the wildcat line.
Not you now.
Valentine's crook spun past his nose, and he sidestepped and caught it as it bounced in the air. With fresh energy, he tore toward the wildcat side and the distant ball, hidden by a gentle fold in the earth.
Sorry, Vista. Keep your temper next time.
But the grog had unguessed at reserves. It pounded up behind Valentine like a galloping horse. Valentine risked a glance over his shoulder and saw Vista running in a two-leg, one-arm canter, the long crook raised to catch him. Vista swung, and Valentine blocked. Valentine shielded his back against another blow and hurried on. Then got a painful rap on the knuckles that opened his hand, and he lost his crook for the second time. He could run better without it anyway. Now for a real burn. Valentine ran, extending his sprint. Were he still a fresh wolf of 22 with an uninjured leg, he would have left Vista gaping behind. As it was, he increased the distance, but only just. The ball would be an awkward thing to carry. Under his arm, he wouldn't be able to run with a proper stride. Held in each hand, he'd be running upright, not a natural human motion. He could kick it, but what if he mistimed an approach and missed? If only he had a satchel. Valentine spotted the ball and changed his angle. Vista slowed behind him, perhaps conserving his wind to intercept Valentine on his sprint back. Even more distance yawned between them. The referee caught up on both of them. Valentine reached the ball and ignored the catcalls. Vista pulled up, perhaps 40 yards away. He left ample room to cut an intercepting course. Valentine dropped his shorts. Someone on the wildcat side had enough of a sense of humor to whistle. Valentine picked up the ball and stuffed it into the elastic waistband, then closed most of the waist in his fist. The ball was too big to go out the leg holes. Vista cocked his head, oddly dog-like, with ears outstretched. Holding the ball in the improvised sack, Valentine ran straight at him. The grog, perhaps fearing another trick, widened his stance and rocked back and forth, crook held loosely in his right hand. At three strides away, Valentine feinted right, away from the crook. Then leaped. He tucked the ball into his belly as he flew through the air, not wanting it batted away, as he went over Vista's head in a great cat leap. It swung its crook where Valentine should have been. Valentine landed lightly on his good leg, had a bad split second when Vista's thrown crook struck him in the ankle, and ran, feeling rapidly growing pain from the blow. Valentine managed to open the distance between them. Bulletproof danced behind their markers, some urging him on by circling their arms and wheels toward the red tape. Valentine crossed the line and fell into a mass of bulletproofs. He felt a sharp slap on his bare buttock and looked to see a craggy-faced woman giving him a gap-toothed grin. Valentine turned to look at his opponent. Vista collapsed to his wide knees, pounding at the turf with great fists. Valentine took the basketball out of his underwear, gave up trying to reach the dispatcher, and tossed the ball in the air. Limping, Valentine went out to Vista. The grog jumped up. Valentine offered his hand. The grog snatched him up by the arm and lowered his head with mouth gaping to bite it off at the wrist. The grog pulled back, a bleeding hole in its cheek. Valentine spun out of reach. The referee trotted up, pistol held pointed at the grog.
Back to our side! Back!
The grog turned away. The referee lowered his gun and looked at Valentine from beneath a sweat-dripping brow.
You, sir, are one dumb son of a bitch. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Anka loomed up.
My David!
I'm fine. A little bruised.
The dispatcher and Zach joined them, the former with the basketball, the latter holding Valentine's clothes.
What did you yell? He forgot all about me.
I accuse his mother of the lowest caste choice of mates. Such an insult can only result in a duel. He started to answer me when you ran.
Maybe you'd better stay in camp when David goes to collect his share.
Share?
You won. A portion of the recovered herd is yours.
And I owe you a great debt. Dispatcher, may I go along and collect my sister?
Go in my place, but keep away from the grog. One blood contest a season is enough.
The Wildcats fell back from their side of the field as they crossed, Valentine holding the basketball up as though it were a torch, per Zack's instruction. A huge legworm, longer than the one Valentine had ridden into the bulletproof camp, led 6 unreined worms onto the contest field. Valentine watched them pull up soil, weeds, and hay stubble like plows. 3 riders sat astride the broad back in the flying carpet side saddle seat Valentine was beginning to recognize.
That's Tika. She's the reiner.
Tika had sun-washed caramel-colored hair, plumed into a lusher version of the foxtail her brother wore, and the tan, windburned face of a woman who seldom knew a roof. The man behind her was shirtless, with bandages wrapped around his midsection. The third rider, a beefy, gray-haired woman, evidently kept the tradition of the third rider being older.
Watch the whiskers on the unreined legworms. Tika! Look at the trouble you cause!
Talk to the herd!
Yeah. The dispatcher won't allow us to ride together, David. Too many brawls.
I thought it was cousins who liked to fight in these parts.
Fight? Or kiss. Fact is, I don't feel guilty about either. I'm adopted.
Valentine spent the rest of the day mildly worried. Duvalier had tucked a note in his pack.
Checking out the other camp. Back tonight. Meow.
And she had not returned. Valentine found himself a minor celebrity in the camp. As he limped around on his sore ankle, bulletproof children came up and bumped him with their fists and elbows. He explored the camp with Price, trying to stave off the coming stiffness by keeping his muscles warm. He looked at some of the carts and sledges the legworms towed. Many held loads of fodder or sides of meat, but one, under guard near the dispatcher's tent, had a generator and racks of military radio gear.
There'll be a party tonight. Weather's nice and the herders will disperse.
The little contest this morning. Does anyone ever not pay up when they lose?
That's why they bring together as much of the tribe as they can. Sort of like wearing your gun at a poker game.
Valentine and Anka did laundry at the wash tubs. The other bulletproofs doing washing insisted on giving them soap flakes and the outside lines for drying their clothes. A woman carrying 6 months of baby under a tie front smock hinted that Valentine would be getting some new clothes that night.
They're going round for donations.
By nightfall, a raucous throng of legworm herders surrounded the barn like a besieging army. Their rain-pierced mounts stood along the road ditch in lines, eating a mixture of grains and hay dumped into the ditch. Valentine didn't feel much like joining. His legs had been filled with asphalt, his ankle had swelled, and his shoulder blade felt like a chiropractor had moved it 4 inches up. He stayed out in the warm night and ate beans from a tin plate, scooping them onto a thick strip of bacon, and watched Anka make a new pack for B out of a legless kitchen chair the Golden One had traded for somewhere. Zack came out of the darkness.
Oh, everyone wants to see you. Dispatcher himself asked for you.
I'm tired, Rainer.
Well, just for a moment. You're bulletproof now. You gotta have a sip.
A sip?
It's where we get our name. What do you think it meant? Kevlar? We got some char barrel aged Kentucky bourbon.
Well, you should have opened with that, Zack. I'd have been up there already.
Valentine scraped off his plate into the legworm feed bucket. Every bite adds an inch, was written on the side. Inside the barn, Valentine entered to applause and whoops. He kept forgetting he was supposed to hate these people. Perhaps they'd bred the legworms that destroyed Foxtrot Company at Little Timber Hill. But they carved out a life, apparently free of the Reapers. He had to give them credit for that. A wood-staved cask, big enough to bathe in, stood upon 2 sawhorses near the band, each of whom had a sizable tumbler tucked under their chair as they scraped and strummed and plucked away. Tika, in a fringed version of her brother's leathers, gave him a welcoming hug that allowed Valentine a whiff of leather-trapped feminine musk. Then she took Zack's hand and pulled him away. The dispatcher poured drinks into everything from soup bowls to elegant crystal snifters with the help of Cookie at the tap.
Our man of the night. How do the victory garlands feel?
They're turning purple.
Valentine accepted a proffered thick-bottomed glass from Cookie. A quarter cup of amber liquor rolled around the bottle.
Some bulletproof will take the edge off.
Just a splash, please, sir. I don't hold my liquor well.
It's that cheap radiator busted you flattest brew in the Midwest is why. Bulletproof's got aroma and character.
Blows your damn head off. That's why we called it bulletproof in the first place. Enjoy.
The dispatcher raised his own glass and brought it halfway to Valentine. Valentine touched his glass to the dispatcher's. The liquor bit, no question, but it brought an instantaneous warmth along for the ride.
He's bulletproof now! Bring out his leathers!
A parade of bulletproof wives and daughters came forward, each holding a piece of leather or armor, a jacket with shoulder pads sewn in, pants, boots, gloves, a gun belt, something that looked like spurs. Valentine stood a little dumbly as they piled the gear on his shoulders and around his feet. It was a dull gunmetal color and made him think of a knight errant.
Zach! Where'd he get to? Zach!
Right here!
Zach came in from the gaping doorway to the barn, Tika in tow, both looking a little disheveled.
Zach, show David how to wear his leathers!
Valentine, Zach, and Tika picked up pieces of his new outfit and went outside. He'd seen breastplates like the one they strapped on before. They were an old army composite, hot as hell, made you feel like a turtle, but they could stop shrapnel.
Oh, you got old Snelling's rig. He was a good rainer, if a bit flash for the bulletproof. Dropped stone dead of a heart attack one hot summer day while climbing his mountain. You never know.
No, you don't.
Zach says you're a flatty?
Iowa, but I left when I was young. I spent a lot of time in the Gulf.
That where you picked up them scars?
Pretty much. What's this on the sleeve?
A series of hooks, reminding Valentine a little of sharpened alligator teeth, ran down the outside seam of the forearm of the jacket.
Serrates. They're for digging in when you mount or hanging on to the side.
Zach showed him how to fix the spurs, which were a little more like the climbing spikes utility linemen wore to reach their wires. They could be flipped up and locked flush to the inner side of the boot. Locked down, they projected out and down from his ankle.
Some guys put them on their boot points. I think that looks queer.
Valentine explored the padding in the jacket shoulders and elbows. Military Kevlar plates were buttoned into the back and double-breasted front. The pants had stiff plastic caps on the knees and shins.
You can take the bulletproof for now, but we generally wear it. Can be a lifesaver.
Valentine felt a bit like a porcupine. His old cat claws would fit right in on this outfit. He could wear them openly, and they'd just look like another set of spikes.
How do you two kiss without harpooning each other?
Ha ha! That's just part of the fun!
Don't make fun of the leathers. A lot of effort goes into each one.
Fine stitching.
Well, I don't mean that. That's legworm egg casing stretched and dried. Getting it is trickier than threading a full-grown legworm for reins. You have to go into a breeding pile and get the egg right after it hatches, because it rots fast if you don't get it scraped out and dried. You have to help the little bugger inside out of it, or he'll eat almost the whole thing. And if you hurt a legworm grub doing that, the adults stomp everything inside.
It's kind of a rite of passage for our youth. They have to go into the winter dog piles and check on the eggs. When they come out with a hide, they're considered full-grown members of the tribe.
Thank you for skipping that step with me. I'll wear it with pride.
But be careful, Dave. There are lots in town that look down on riders. You get called a hillbilly and a grog fucker, and worse. Some think riding herd on a legworm's the same as cleaning up after a gaunt.
Phew, he looks too fine for that kind of talk, Zach.
How do you do the foxtails in your hair?
Easy. There's a cut-down pine cone attached to the tie. Some braid their hair around it. I can show you. Now that you've got a few worms, you should look the part.
Zach, I want to talk to you about that. I'm passing through. Hoffman Price brought us up here in the hope that we'd get a guide to the Ohio River, up around Ironton or Portsmouth. I'll swap you my share of the recovered beast for a ride.
Well, I've got a bigger string a little to the west. I'm leaving early tomorrow to get back to him.
Well, then I'll drive you. That way I'll get my string back.
He's already got a girl, Tika. You'll have to excuse my sister, Dave. She's man crazy.
Any girl who doesn't want a husband by 20 and babies after is man crazy, in my brother's opinion. Oh, Zach, you know you're the only one for me.
Only one? When I'm around, that is. And that's just because I keep saying no to a train.
Yeah.
Tika tried to stomp Zack with her heavy riding boot, but he danced out of the way.
You're a fresh piece of worm trail, Zachary Stark.
What in the hell are you wearing, David Black?
Alessa Duvalier stepped from the darkness. She wore her long coat, black side turned out, and carried her walking stick.
And that's the girl, Tika.
Zack grabbed for his sister's long hair. She dodged out of the way and got behind Valentine. Valentine smelled blood on her.
Apparently I'm bulletproof now. What do you think?
I'm tempted to get your pistol and test you. Starving. Is there any food left?
Sure, I'll show you. Excuse us.
Valentine led her up to the food tables, and she cut open a loaf and filled it with barbecue. They went back to their camp in the empty field. Anka and B were wrapped up in a fireside game that involved piling buttons on a rounded rock.
Price is working his mule. Did they offer us transport, my David?
Oh, he's got a ride. Count on him.
What have you been up to?
I didn't miss your performance this morning. I just watched it from the Wildcat side. I was checking out these camps. There's some bad blood between these, tribes.
You've made it worse?
Of course. We might want to shift a little more to the west. When it got dark, I offed a couple of the Wildcats and left a note warning them not to use grogs in any future contests. They were already stirred up because someone got shot when they captured those bulletproofs. When they see what I did to the bodies, it ought to put them over the edge. A lot of their riders were upset that they let it go with just a contest. This should put them right over the edge.
Anka sent a cascade of buttons down the side of the rock and bowed to B. He got up and went over to the wrapping for his oversized gun. Valentine rose and looked across the ridge with the Wildcat campfires. Had some of them gone out? He should have counted. Captain Lahav would have taken a piece out of his ass for that kind of sloppiness. He picked up his U-gun.
Wait here. If shooting starts, let's meet at the creek we crossed just before we turned in here.
Val, what are you doing?
I'm going to warn them.
Why? The bulletproof will probably win. There's more of them. It'll get a good war started between these assholes.
They're kids all over the place.
Nits make lice, Val.
Is that who you really are?
Whose side are you on, Ghost? I know the answer. Your egos.
Valentine hurried up to the barn, the new leather pants creaking as he trotted. His ankle hurt, but seconds might count. The party was still in full cry, and Zack and Tika were stomping the concrete with boot heel and toe in syncopation, another quarrel forgotten. Valentine went straight for the dispatcher. The crowd parted, alarmed at the U-gun. Valentine carefully carried it pointed down, his hand well away from the trigger area. Zack stepped in at his rifle arm.
Oh, Dave, there's no need.
Watch that weapon, David. What's going on? Pants too tight and you're looking for the tailor?
The dispatcher. Our grogs were down looking at the contest field. They went off to some bushes to, you know.
And?
They saw the Wildcats. Some of them on their worms, armed. Others gathered.
Coming this way?
Grogs just ran back. Armed riders is all I know.
Carpenter, get to the herd riders, have them try to lead the wild worms west. Mother Shaw, take the children out to the clover field. Everyone else who can shoulder a gun, get to the rain worms. Lead riders Manvey, French, Chernyowski, and McGee, come with me. David, you and your people with Zack. Zack, get them clear.
You might see some fancy riding after all.
The crowd dissolved, and the musicians cased their instruments. If not sober, at least sobered. Zack brought Valentine to his legworm at the road trough. Other riders were climbing on board, teenage boys watching the mounts, when a rocket cut across the sky, leaving a sparking trail. It exploded overhead. The legworm reared, but Zack settled it. Zack extended a hand, but Valentine found that with the hooks and spikes in his costume, climbing the side of the legworm was possible without assistance, as long as another shell didn't fire.
What the hell was that?
Yeah, big fireworks, sorta. Scares the worms. They're trying to make the mounts bolt.
Valentine saw one worm humping as it headed down the road, a rider raising dust as he was dragged. Another rocket only served to hurry the legworms in the direction they were already going. Zack reached their campsite.
Get on! We gotta ride out of here. Where's Price?
I don't know. Still off with his mule.
Valentine helped the others up. B looked alarmed and refused to mount. Anka reached out, but she slapped his hand away and ran off toward the road.
I'll drop you off with the kids in the cover field. You'll be safe there.
Take us to the fight.
Well, the dispatcher...
The dispatcher's gonna need every gun. We got three, right?
Valentine looked over his shoulder at Duvalier and Anka. Anka nodded. He had his cannon and Price's Kalashnikov. Duvalier patted her shotgun.
I'm happy to plant a few bobcats.
Wildcats.
Let's get online.
Valentine looked down at his U-gun. The only ammunition he had for it was Everready's 5.56mm. He wished he had a real sniper load. He looked at Duvalier's shotgun. The Mossberg would be useless in anything but a close quarters fight.
Allie, take Price's rifle.
Be sparing! There is only one magazine.
Where's the rest?
In boxes!
Anka rummaged around in the battle satchel that contained spare bullets and gear for his gun and handed him the box. Cookie and Gibson joined them, and the legworm slid quickly down the hill to where the other riders were gathering. Cookie had his ear to a headset, coming from a hand-crank-charged portable radio. Another rocket exploded over the massive barn. Yellow-white sparks ran down the tin roof.
They're good with the fuses over there. Probably been cutting them all day. So you're a brother rider now.
Seems like.
Zack lined up his legworm behind another. Just behind them, in the center of the column of legworms, the dispatcher waved a flashlight. The column turned, and the legworms went single file up toward the barn.
If we go to the battle line, you, the girl, and the grog can cling to the cargo net and keep your heads down.
Valentine learned what battle line was as soon as they crested the hill and turned their line north. Another sky-cracking explosion over the barn sent a legworm humping over from the other side of the hill, its riders hanging on for their lives. The line of battle-ready legworms twitched, but stayed in station front to back. Cookie listened to his headset.
They're coming! Flank facing offside!
Women and teenage boys with rifles, hooks looped around their chests and attached to their ankles, joined the fighting line, padding their guns. The column moved in the direction the fleeing legworm had just abandoned. Valentine readied himself for what would be on the reverse slope of the hill when they topped it. Cookie slapped his thigh, headset to his ear.
Zack, we got them! They're in the field, not halfway across, in open order!
Zack's mount crested the hill and came down the other side, turning slightly as it followed the worm directly ahead. 20 or more legworms crept, or so it looked in the distance, in three columns across the contest field toward the bulletproof camp. Valentine took comfort in the thick length of legworm between him and the wildcats. It was like shooting from a movable wall. He thought of stories he'd read of fighting warships, their lines of cannons presented to each other. In naval terminology, the bulletproofs were crossing the T against the oncoming wildcats. The dispatcher's legworm followed theirs, and the one behind his let loose.
Whoa! Pipe organ's firing!
Streams of sparks cut down the hillside and exploded in the earth among the columns. The wildcat legworms began to turn and get into line to present their own bank of rifles to the bulletproofs, but the mounts kept trying to get away from the explosions. Machine guns from the front wildcat legworms probed their line, red tracers reaching for the riders. Another wildcat firework burst above. Valentine felt the legworm jump, but it had overshot. The bulletproof column accelerated. Zack employed his sharpened hook to urge the legworm along and close the gap that opened between his mount and the one ahead. Zack still had his rifle slung. His job was to keep his beast in line, not fight. Now the two masses of legworms, the bulletproofs tightly in line and moving quickly, the wildcats and an arrowhead-shaped mob converged. Anka sighted and fired.
Damn!
Loading another shell, he shot again.
Ha! Got him!
A legworm in the wildcats turned, and others writhed to follow or to avoid its new course. Anka picked off another driver.
That's some kind of shoot!
The front end of the bulletproof column began to fire. It had run ahead of the wildcats. The marksman got an angle on the exposed riders clinging to the right sides of their mounts. The wildcat column dissolved into chaos. Each legworm turned and hurried back toward their camp as fast as the hundreds and hundreds of legs could carry their riders.
That's how you win a scrap. Tight ride. Damn, if Manby can't point a cow.
It's because we were ready for him.
Cease fire!
The wildcats retreated in disorder. Valentine hadn't used a single bullet.
You
More rounds of bulletproof were being issued as riders danced jigs. Other legworms, still with armed riders, circled the barn at a distance, though the scouts had claimed that the Wildcats were decamping and heading for higher ground to the east.
Zach, take it you're willing to give our friends a ride north now. And if you aren't, I'll make it an order.
Of course I'm willing. I'm willing to dig a hole to hell if that's where they want me to drive a worm.
Your sister can go watch your strength.
Worm cast.
Better luck next time.
What's your destination over the Ohio?
We're trying to find an old relative. She's come up in the world, and we're going to see if she'll set us up.
Take Three Fingers Charlie, Zach. He's got connections with the smugglers. Tell him to trade egg hides if he has to. I want these folks set up so they can pass through the Ohio Ordinance in style.
I was scavenging for mule shoes. He found a mess of wild carrots, and they were fat and sweet, so I pulled up a bushel.
You missed one hell of a bag.
I know. I saw it from a couple miles away. You bulletproofs throw one hell of a party. Fireworks and everything.
Price looked at the bourbon sloppy smiles all around.
What? Don't you all like carrots?
Valentine, Price, B, Anka, and Duvalier stood at the Laurelton station a week later in a blustery rain. Zach and the other bulletproofs departed after depositing them in the care of a man named McNulty, a river rat trader and labor agent friendly to the tribe on the south bank of the Ohio. After introductions at the river rat's anchored barge house and one last round of bulletproof bourbon in farewell, Zach turned over 6 full legworm egg hides, cured and bound in twine. Valentine only parted with them after McNulty gave them Ohio ID cards, ration books, and an up-to-date map of the area. The residents kept to their towns. Patrolmen on bicycles, most armed with nothing more than a sap, rode the towns and highways. Valentine saw only one vehicle, a garbage truck full of coal. The ground reminded Valentine of some of the hills near the Iron Range in Minnesota, low and jumbled and full of timber. But where the forests in the Northwoods had stood since before the Sioux hunted, the forests in Ohio had sprung up since 2022, breaking up and overrunning the little plots carved out by man. So when they cautiously turned the bend nearing Laurelton, only to find more windowless houses and piles of weed-bearing brick, he couldn't help feeling deflated.